Ruby Ryder here. Welcome to Pegging Paradise Podcast number 186 on February 6th, 2018. Changing the world, one ass at a time. If you enjoy and appreciate my work and you want to help me spread the word about pegging, please consider becoming a patron of mine so that I can spend more time doing podcasts, answering questions, writing articles, and recording videos for people interested in pegging everywhere. Just go to patreon.com/rubyrider, or you can click the support my work button on the right hand side of my website. And remember, there is an extraordinary and carefully curated selection of body safe non-toxic toys, and they can be purchased from the little black dress of pleasure products, Entice Me. Just go to enticeme.com/rubyrider and be sure to use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your entire purchase. That's RYDER. You will be supporting Pegging Paradise with every purchase you make. Okay, let's start right off with, it's not exactly a correction, it's an addition. Remember how I was talking about those cool products that I found at the anime show? And there was the Liberator cushion called On a Mission. And I couldn't remember the name of, like, I was saying, well, this is the perfect cushion if you have the fantasy of, like, fucking someone, whether it's a woman or a man, and then being fucked by your partner. And I forgot what the name of that was called, because that wasn't too long ago at a podcast that someone enlightened me as to the term for that. And I had to verify it in the Urban Dictionary. It is indeed called Lucky Pierre. Somebody commented on the podcast and said, I think the term you could not come up with was Lucky Pierre. As a fan of pegging and group sex, I had to put my 2 cents in. So there you go. Lucky Pierre it is. Maybe I'll remember it next time. Let's jump right into your letters. Hello, Ruby. Hope you're well. Have you ever heard of a sex toy brand called the Kink Factory? I recently ordered a metal anal plug from them and was told that the metal was 316 medical grade after contacting them. I was wondering if you have any knowledge or experience with this company or their toys, as I struggled to find much out about them on the internet. And then he's got a link, and this is from the Gunslinger. So, Mr. Gunslinger, you know, I just assumed that your gender was male. That was kind of interesting. Anyway, Gunslinger person, I checked it out myself. The Kink Factory seems like they've been around for a while, but they don't make a really big deal of talking about how they use the best stuff on their website, which is usually the thing that I look for. I was able to find them selling on Amazon, and I checked out the reviews. That's another method that you can use. Selling on Amazon to begin with is not necessarily a good thing. The lower price isn't necessarily a good thing either. So let me share just a couple of things with you that I found. One person said that lubricant can manage to get under the gem and it starts turning a darkish color. And they said after they removed the gem, which was held to the metal via a rubber adhesive, that they found that the gem actually had a silver paint-like tint on its base, and the discoloration was the tint slowly being removed. So it's like one of those plastic gem things that has the silver backing to make it sparkly and shiny. And let's see, another person said this: if you're looking at this product, chances are you've done a little research. A lot of Sexpert recommended brands cost closer to the $100 range, and you know you aren't supposed to get the ones that only cost $9. So this product may seem in the middle of quality and cost for a sex toy. Maybe it was just a fluke, but I don't think that's so. Even before using this, I was a little underwhelmed. And then, let's see, they talk about how the jewel just totally fell out and wouldn't stay in no matter which way you tilted it, so they fixed it with some hot glue. Let's say they say that for the price, it could have a jewel that fit. However, all the people in the review say that it is a heavy steel, and so their assumption is that it is absolutely stainless steel. Hopefully it's the grade that you think it is. I would say it's about a 60-70% chance that you've got a decent toy there, and certainly that it's not going to harm you, probably. But I don't know anything about the company. I really don't. The gem butt plugs that I'm used to are not metal, they're glass. So I'll put a link for that in the Linkorama in case you're interested, but I think you're fine with that one. Good luck with it. Let us know how you like it. Okay, my next letter. I really enjoy your podcasts. I've been lucky enough to be married to a woman who enjoys pegging me for over 8 years. She loves that there is an alternative to PIV when she's not in the mood that can still satisfy me. I've been on the receiving end of pegging for over 20 years, and never once have I been with a woman who wouldn't strap it on for me. My first question, I'm moving up from a 9-inch by 2-inch diameter to an 11-inch by 2.25-inch dildo. My wife can usually get the entire 9-inch inside me, and I'm hoping I can take the entire 11-inch as well. At either of these depths, is she penetrating my inner sphincter? If so, what are the risks involved in doing so, and what care should we take to avoid injury? Do dildos at these sizes qualify me as a size king? Also, my wife isn't very vocal when she's pegging me, but once in a while she'll talk dirty, which absolutely sends me into orbit. I've asked her to do it more often, but when I ask, it sounds forced and inauthentic. Any advice for her that might make dirty talk come more naturally? Lastly, I like to use poppers when I'm being pegged, and I know it's probably not the healthiest thing to do. Do you have any thoughts on these? Thank you for all you do for the pegging community. I look forward to hearing your response on your podcast. And this is from Robert in Las Vegas. Okay, Robert in Las Vegas, let me see here. Your first question is that you're moving up from a 9 by 2 to an 11 by 2.25. You are absolutely going past the inner sphincter, which is called Hirsch's sphincter. And that's a sphincter that separates the rectal canal from the colon. You can push past this with care. You shouldn't slam past it. You should sort of inch into it and make sure that when you keep going that there's no pain. If you're having trouble getting past a certain point, just to have the best angle on the whole thing, it would be great for your knees to be up to your chest because that straightens out that 90-degree turn that is usually there. That keeps the anal sphincter closed, so just to have knees to chest would sort of open up that pathway a little bit more. I'm not sure how comfortable it is when you have a big toy to have yourself in that position, but that is one of the things to consider. Let's see, do these dildos qualify you as a size king? Oh, please, sir, let go of the labels. If you would like to claim yourself as a size king, you can absolutely do that. But I don't think there's necessarily really a cutoff. It's not like I've said, okay, everybody who uses toys above this size can call themselves a size king. Nah. But I think you can call yourself that if you like the way that it feels, if your wife likes the sound of it, then you two just go for it. And let's see. What are the risks involved in penetrating that inner sphincter and what care should be taken to avoid injury? We touched on that a little bit. The risks are that you can cause damage in there. I don't think it's real likely unless you get really frisky with that humongous dildo, which having wielded a decent-sized dildo like that before, I know is not that easy to do. And you really should never be slamming in there with something that big. So as long as you inch in there, you know, centimeter by centimeter, let's go to the metric system here. I think you should be fine. And then to your next question. Also, my wife isn't very vocal when she's pegging me. Once in a while, she'll talk dirty, and you love the dirty talk. You know, I don't know where you live, but in Vegas, I would think that there would be someone there who might be doing some sex education and teaching about dirty talk. Or if you cannot find anyone in Vegas, I would bet there might be someone online who has either something written or something recorded, or maybe even does webinars about dirty talk. So I would research that if I were you. The other thing I have to offer is that one of the ways that you can do dirty talk is just to describe what's happening. Now, in the beginning, it may sound inauthentic and sort of weird because she's not used to it. And when you're not used to doing dirty talk, you know, it's awkward. I felt really self-conscious when I first started doing it. And then I realized all I really need to do is describe either what's happening or what I'm going to do. I can't believe how hot it is with the dildo sliding in and out of your ass. Oh my God. It looks so cool sliding in and out. I'm going to take this entire dildo and put it all the way up your ass. You know, you can, same thing, you can describe what's happening, you can describe what's going to happen, you can even describe what did happen. When I first put this thing in your ass, I couldn't believe the noise you made. Oh my God, you know, just whatever grabs you. That is one of the ways that you can sort of fake dirty talk, if you will. You know, there's all kinds of different things you can say that may or may not appeal to you. I'm assuming she knows you pretty well, so she would know areas that you might want to be teased about. You know, do you like wearing panties? You know, is she, when she's fucking you? And that blue silk pulled down, I can see that blue silk right here as I'm pushing this way up your ass. Stuff like that. Or talk about things in the future. Tomorrow morning, after I fucked you this good, I'm going to put those panties on you while we eat breakfast. You know, stuff like this. So those are some hints, kind of. But I'm quite sure if you research it a little bit on the internet, you could find someone who has a bunch of more hints about how to do dirty talk. My favorite person to consult when I am really feeling tongue-tied is my friend who is a phone sex operator. Yeah, she can do the talk, man. She fucking talks. She comes up with all kinds of stuff. She's so creative, but that's what she does all day, right? So she's got it down. Plus, she's an incredibly intelligent and creative woman with a really lovely, sadistic and humiliation sort of leanings. And yeah, she's really good. But research on the internet and check it out. I am quite sure there are things that you can find and, you know, pay for it and enroll her or buy the book and have them send it to her and things like that. The other thing you can do is when you are fucking her, you can do dirty talk. Do it in the way that you would like to hear, you know, and that could be sort of like be an example. And who knows, it might turn her on just as much as it turns you on when she does it for you. Okay, and one more hint. When she gives it a try, give her nothing but positive reinforcement. Tell her how thankful you are that she is doing it, how hot it is to hear her say it, and you would love her to keep doing that over and over and over again until she gets comfortable with it. Positive reinforcement, dude. Okay, what else did you want to know here? Poppers. You know what? I did some research on poppers, and, well, you know, a lot of people would like to think that there's no side effects. But any kind of chemical that sort of really messes with circulation and respiration and things like that, there's definitely side effects. They're not necessarily real serious, and very few people have issues with them, but you should definitely not take them if you're taking Viagra or if you have blood pressure or heart issues. And, you know, if you dig on the internet, you can find that there are some things that are questionable, but it does sound a little bit, alarmist, if you will. I am personally not into them at all. I don't really like to be altered except maybe by a little bit of alcohol when I have sex. I might change that a little bit seeing as pot is now legal in California, but I don't have a really good pot connection. If I get high, it's going to have to be me and my partner because I've done the thing where I'm not high and they are. Oh man, that is a fucking pain in the ass and not a good type of pain in the ass either. It's like they're on a totally different planet than me, so I lost my taste for sex and high when I had that happen to me a few times. And anyway, poppers, I don't really know that much about. I have asked a couple of friends, but it wasn't a really involved conversation. And they just said, you know, it's not that big of a deal. So yeah, that's all the information I have on it. I'll put some links to a couple of the places that I found about it. And let me see if there's anything specific that I looked up that I wanted to read you from those websites. Okay, I'm just going to go through some of the side effects that they talk about in this one health-oriented website. It's actually Livestrong. So headaches is the most common side effect. And it's alkyl nitrate. It's an alkyl nitrate inhalant. And the other thing that I mentioned already is the cardiovascular, because it creates a series of cardiovascular effects, the dilation of the blood vessels, and it causes a drop in blood pressure. So you could be dizzy or feel lightheaded. You could even pass out sometimes. So if you have low blood pressure, it's probably not a good thing at all for you. Let's see. They say that extended use of poppers may cause severe damage to your nervous system. Nervous system and brain may experience problems, including limb spasms and brain spasms. I think this is like a total overdoing of it, basically. And then they have other common side effects. May vary, including nausea, vomiting, loss of sensation, hearing loss, head pressure, flushing of the face and neck, skin rash, and feelings of restlessness. They do talk about overdose for those people who just can't keep their nose out of the little bottle. Popper overdoses can result in heart failure, can kill users through asphyxiation, because the inhalant crowds out the oxygen from the lungs. So basically, using it a couple of times a month, I found on another website, is probably going to be totally fine, okay, as long as you do not have the medical conditions that they talk about. But, you know, use it with care. It's just like alcohol. Use it with care. Don't just say, oh, you know, these are totally safe, and so let's go for it. But if it works for you, then I think it's fine. Just use it with responsible habits, I guess. It's an awkward way of saying that, but you get what I mean. Be responsible about your, quote, drug, end quote, use. Because, you know, it's over the counter. You can buy them anywhere. You can buy them at any drugstore. You can buy them at gas stations. So if it was really dangerous, they probably wouldn't be selling them that much. But please, use good judgment when you use them and don't totally overdo it. So, Robert in Las Vegas, before I sign off here, I noticed that you actually have already responded to let me know how that bigger dildo worked for you. And here's your next letter. If you recall, I recently sent you a message about moving up from a 9-inch by 2-inch diameter to an 11-inch by 2.25-inch diameter. I wanted to follow up and let you know how it went. Yesterday, my wife and I got it on, and the new dildo was amazing. She was able to drive it balls deep inside of me. She was a little apprehensive, as this member is as long as her forearm, from elbow to wrist. I assured her that I would stop her if I couldn't take it. There's just something about the feeling of a monster like that being driven balls deep in one swift and powerful stroke after a bit of steady warm-up, of course. If any of your regular listeners are curious about the brand and model, I'm including a link. It's the Hoodlum 11-inch realistic dildo with suction cup base. Its packaging claims that it's phthalate-free, but given that the adult novelty market is largely unregulated, we still cover our toys with a condom. This begs just one last question. Are there condoms available that are longer than a Trojan Magnum? Again, thanks for all that you do for your audience. Robert from Las Vegas. So I checked out the dildo. Oh my God. Yeah, it might not have phthalates, but I'm quite sure it's not ideal material. But then some people compromise when they get to the bigger ones because they can be prohibitively expensive, or they cannot have the sizes that you want, right? So let me tell you a little story about putting a condom over a potentially toxic or non-body safe toy. So I've written this article, and I'll link to it in the Linkorama, about toxic toys, about staying away from toxic toys, talks about phthalates, talks about all that stuff, right? This particular toy that you have, the only mention I could find about what material it's made out of is PVC, which is really something you don't want to be putting inside you either. So, one of the things that happened to me when I was at a toxic toy class a long time ago, at a conference, is somebody said, well, just put a condom on it, right? And there was a panel of sex educators, toy store owners, things like that up there. And one of the women said, you know, I hate it when people say that because there is no study that shows that those toxic chemicals that we were just talking about don't go through that condom and right into your body, right? There is no study for that. Condoms are not made to keep chemicals out. They're made to keep bacteria and sperm out. So that just kind of stuck in my head, and I thought, wow, that's a really good point. There was a link on FetLife to this article on my website, and this man read it, and he sent me a message and said, wow, this is really good information. I can't believe I didn't know any of this before, and now I understand why I have been having reactions to all of my toys. So he goes on to tell me the story that he has a collection of anal toys he loves to play with, but that every time he starts to use them, they start to burn, and he's tried everything to try and get whatever it is out of it so that they wouldn't burn so he could continue to use them. He tried boiling them, he tried soaking them in bleach, he tried baking them, putting them in the dishwasher, soaking them in alcohol, you know, everything. He tried everything. So when I responded to him, And of course, he said he was really thankful that he had found out about this information. So when I responded to him, I said you tried everything. Did you try putting condoms on them? And he said, yes. And you know what happened was it delayed the onset of the burning about 3 to 4 minutes. And if I put 2 condoms on, it delayed it from 5 to 6 minutes. Okay, this is purely an anecdotal story. I get that. However, It's your body you're messing with here, so I'd be really careful about it. The way that you tell that a toy has phthalates is primarily going to be smell, too. If it has a horrible smell, then that's not good. If it doesn't really have a horrible smell, then it could be that the part that's not body safe is that it's porous, and that porosity can invite bacteria to stay in there, and then every time you use it, the bacteria can cause an infection. So as long as you're only using it for your ass and not for anything else that you and your wife do, it should be okay. But those toys with porosity have a limited life, so you should know that as well. But, don't be all happy about just put a condom on it. I do know that the Trojan Magnums, they make Trojan Magnums XL. I don't know if they're longer than the regular ones, but I do know that they have not just Trojan Magnums, but literally Trojan Magnum XL. And the reason that I know this is because I bought those condoms to use on the Hoss, which is the humongous dildo that Tantus makes. And I know that it fit fairly well, but it did not go all the way down the shaft. So when you're talking about, balls deep, well, you're going to want something that goes as far down as possible, even though you're always going to have some contact from the material of the toy itself, which is probably why you should get a better toy. Okay, so while I'm editing this, I decided to look it up, and I found actually a bigger condom, and that is the Durex Double XL. That is actually 9.25 inches long, so that's the longest one that I can find. However, the Hoss was the toy that I was talking about, and the measurements for that are 11 inches long, and it maxes out at 2.75 inches on the head, and the shaft is 2.25 inches. So that is actually a toy I would really recommend that you save up and invest in, sir. So anyway, I'm so glad you're having a lovely time with that toy. Part of the reason I think it feels so amazing is because of the vagus nerve. I did a podcast recently and talked a lot about my discoveries about the vagus nerve because I suspected and, heard other people talking about it too, that the longer anal insertions come really close to the vagus nerve, and stimulation of the vagus nerve is actually an amazing thing. It not only just feels amazing, but it is an amazing thing for your body. So I'm going to find the podcast that I talked about the vagus nerve in, and I'm going to put that in the Linkorama, labeled clearly, because I can't remember the number right now, but take a look at that and check it out, because that might be why it feels so good. And I am really glad to hear that you did a nice long warm-up before she did the slamming it into you. Thank you for telling me that. That makes me feel a little bit better about that you're not going to be causing yourself damage and you're just going to be having fun. Good for you. Thanks for letting us know how it went. Okay, here's my next letter. Hello, Ruby. Love your podcast and website. Just a quick note on cross-dressing for pegging. I love to do it when partying with a lady friend. I'm not even close to passable, but I have lots of skimpy lingerie and accessories to wear while partying with a lady friend. The sexy women's clothing turns me into a complete slut. You never really talk about partying and reaching an elevated state during pegging. I find it to be the most delicious experience available. Poppers completely enhance the experience and allow for accommodation of very large cocks. Anyhow, I'm sure there are other pegging party boys, and he spells it B-O-I-S. Be nice to hear about other enthusiasts. Cheers and much love. So, this is the Poppers podcast, apparently. You're in good company, sir, and thank you so much for writing in and telling us a bit about how you experienced the cross-dressing thing. There are a few things that people have written to kind of follow up with the cross-dressing podcast. Maybe they send them in later, they have something else to say, and so I think this is one of those, and it's certainly welcome. So thanks for writing in and telling us about your sexy women's clothing turning you into a complete slut. I have heard that before, and I think it's pretty hot. All right, here's the next one. Hey, Ruby, just finished listening to podcast number 182, and you've done it again. Although I'm fairly disciplined and able to suppress my instinct to write at the slightest provocation, I am again moved to commit fingers to keyboard and dash off several paragraphs of inane twaddle to dispatch in your direction. Sorry, Before I launch into my little story, I'll refresh our acquaintance. I've written to you a couple of times before, and you've graciously read my submissions. Oh, I like that concept, submissions, on your podcast. I became known as the engineer because of my not-so-endearing tendency to over-analyze, oops, another bad pun in there somewhere, isn't there, and provide laborious, often unnecessary details. So you know what to expect, don't you? At the end of the podcast, you mentioned that you were linking to Janet's Closet, a retailer that features cross-dressing supplies, lingerie, and women's shoes in large sizes. I live within a few miles of Janet's, which is currently transitioning from closet to dungeon, as it seemingly expands into another area of kink. I've been there on occasion and may write about my experience another time. For now, this little background story. Many years ago, somewhere around 1990, Easter Sunday fell on April 15th, coinciding with Income Tax Day. I took the family to visit my sister, who lives about 2.5 hours from our home. We were planning to have a relatively short visit because I had to return home that evening to fill out the tax forms. So we left sister's house in plenty of time to accomplish that, or so I thought. On the way home, the oil light came on in my car and the engine started to sound like a room full of grandmothers furiously clanking together knitting needles. Uh-oh, what to do? It was evening on Easter Sunday and nothing was open where I could seek assistance. Leaving out a lot of detail here. I wound up pressing on and drove on without stopping, finally making it home with my car sounding like a crazed steam-powered sewing machine. Next day, I had it evaluated at an auto dealer's service department and was told that the engine was trash, necessitating its replacement. Ouch. I had it towed to National Machined Engines, a place that specializes in repairs of this type, located in nearby Wyandotte, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Wyandotte, Michigan. I spoke with the owner, and we agreed that he would fix me up with a new short block that would take care of my problem. This part of the story has a happy ending. Everything went as planned, and my car was restored to operation. Fast forward 20 or so years. The internet age is exploding, and I'm exploring areas of sexual interest, particularly those that relate to my special passion, wearing silky feminine lingerie. I somehow stumble across the name of a local specialty store called Janet's Closet. I did a bit of research and found that the store was located in Wyandotte, which is just a few miles up the road. Looked up more information on it and found a story that laid out the history of the store, which had formerly been called National Machined Engines, and its owner, a longtime crossdresser whose female persona is known as Janet. Small world time. Turns out that Janet was the mechanic I went to all those years ago for an engine replacement. Back in December, I was excited to hear that you were planning podcasts focused on crossdressing and bisexuality, because I fit into both of those categories. I had awoken early in the morning and had turned on the podcast to try and help me drift back off to sleep. But I was so excited about the upcoming podcast that I couldn't sleep, and started writing to you to relate my feelings and experiences in these areas. Then sanity took hold and I realized that these two subjects, although quite linear in their emergence in my life, are intimately and inextricably linked, making it difficult to discuss one without the other. It was a long, convoluted path that I wanted to get here, and I didn't know whether to treat the subjects independently or together, since your plan was to separate them in your podcasts. For me, bisexuality probably would have never evolved had I not been a nearly lifelong, albeit partial, crossdresser. I also realized that you've already read two of my letters online, although crossdressing and bisexuality were not the main focus. I didn't want to be perceived as seeking too much attention, especially since you were hoping to hear from many other listeners who shared these interests. I contemplated volunteering to be interviewed for a perhaps separate podcast, as I'm exceptionally candid, open, and honest, and enthusiastic about discussing how these topics factor into my life. But then I considered that this might be presumptuous on my part, to think that I was somehow interesting enough to be presented in such a way. So I didn't finish my missive at the time, and have been content to sit back and enjoy the experiences of the others whose stories you featured on the Crossdresser chapters, as well as looking forward to hearing the upcoming bisexual-flavored ones. I'll stop here for now, but I do have a couple of other things to mention at some point. As always, I'm grateful for your expertise and enthusiasm in presenting information on the topics that you cover in your podcasts and online materials. Happy New Year. Regards, Chuck, also known as Silky, also known as the Engineer. That is an amazing story. That is a totally amazing story, that the guy who owned the machine shop was Janet, or is Janet now. That is so awesome. Oh my gosh, I have no idea how to pronounce Wyandotte, Wyandotte, whatever. I hope I got that right. And I was thinking, wow, this is pretty specific. So there's a lot of personal information, and it probably doesn't out you, or perhaps you don't care that it does, but yes, we were treated a little bit to the engineer at the end of your letter with the machinations, if you will, of your mind going back and forth about whether or not you should write in. You can always write, and I won't always use the letters that I get. I use a lot of them, but I don't use all of them. It really depends on how well they fit into the podcast and that kind of stuff. But I'm certainly glad you shared this story with us, because it's a surprising one, and I love the vision of the machine shop guy turned to Janet's closet. I love that. It makes me think a little bit of the last live theater I went to see, which was Kinky Boots. I'm pretty sure that's the last one I went to see. It was amazing. And the whole story of Kinky Boots is totally cool. If you haven't seen it, you should. And if it comes through as live theater in your town, go see it. It's really, really amazing. Okay, here we go. Next letter. I remember the first time a woman said she wanted to stick a dildo up my ass, and I said, no way. That was the biggest mistake of my sexual life. Perhaps if she explained about prostate orgasms and how powerful they are, boy do I know now. I could have experienced the pure pleasure years earlier. Perhaps she didn't know herself. Now, like so many of us, we're trying to make up for lost time. This was a comment on a podcast that I had, and I wanted to share that with you. I have a couple of other things I want to read to you. The first thing I want, and basically it relates to shame, that comment got me to thinking about shame and about how there's so much potential shame connected to pursuing your desires, especially when they are in the areas of pegging and even more, bisexuality, cross-dressing, things like that. I mean, wow. So I wanted to talk about shame for a little bit, and partly I want to talk about it because I ran across this exquisite piece of writing. A woman wrote this, a woman who lives in India, Arushi. She's 26 and living in India, and she posted this piece up on FetLife. There are many, many groups on FetLife doing all kinds of different things, and there's writers there, of course. And so sometimes people have groups where they have a writing challenge once a week. So this was in response to a writing challenge. And let me scroll down here and see. The writing challenge was, the writing must begin with, my mother always told me. So let me read you what this amazing writer from India wrote here. My mother always told me that ladies don't sit with their legs apart. I remember so many times she'd slide in next to me at parties and pinch my thigh before pushing my legs together. Don't wear skirts if you can't keep your legs together, she'd say out of the corner of her mouth. I don't want to wear skirts, I would tell her, wincing and angry, but skirts are all you buy me. Sit properly like a lady or watch what I do to you, she'd say darkly before walking towards the light and laughter reflected off the chandelier. She disappeared into the sparkling laughter. That's how she seemed to me, like there was always something sparkling around her. Their world sparkled. Of course, I knew that really wasn't true. I knew what was actually inside the glitter and beneath the shiny hair. Their glasses were filled, not with wine, but with numbing tonic. Their outfits were an expression, not of self, but of pleas to be accepted into the fold. Their smiles were pleas, too, not to accept their hospitality, but to believe their individual facades of happiness. And in the midst of that, the midst of refilling glasses while internally crushing any hopes she may have had of a different life, my mother, the always gracious hostess, always managed to take the time to make sure my knees were together. She called it good manners, but I think it was less about manners and more about the fact that she cannot stand vulgarity. You'd think vulgarity is subjective, but to my mother, it's practically a science. Red makeup of any kind is vulgar. So is any dress that contains a slit. Cleavage is also vulgar, but legs and shoulders are not. Snug-fit clothes are vulgar if you are fat, and on her watch, you were either perfect or fat. I thought all my friends were skinny. She thought one of them was skinny. Bronze highlights are vulgar. The list is long and exhaustive, but there was one thing she despised more than anything: ladies with their legs apart. And she was determined to turn me into a lady. One afternoon, she came home to find me in the lobby with a few classmates, girls and boys. It was Saturday. We were all in our school track suits. I was lying on the couch on my back, and my leg was swung over the side of the sofa. My mother entered through the side door and came to greet us. After she was done saying hello, she asked me to come speak with her in her bedroom. "How many times have I told you not to sit like that?" She was furious. "Why don't you just go sell it in the street?" This was confusing, mostly because I was not exactly sure what "it" was supposed to be. They tell you a lot of things when you're a young girl. They teach you things to prepare you for womanhood, but those things don't make much sense when you're learning them. My mother taught me to sit with my legs closed, dry my underwear privately in the bathroom where no one could see it, cover my chest in front of men. She taught me these things when I was too young to understand that my body contained sexuality. In a way, in teaching these things, we alert girls to their status as sexual objects before they are old enough to understand what sexual objects are. In teaching them to cover up, we teach them that there is something to hide. As I grew older, my mother grew more and more concerned about my lack of ladylike behavior. The act of sitting with my legs apart became an act of rebellion because I learned that no matter how much I cover myself up and how proper I pretend to be, it won't protect me from sexual predators. Instead, her constant insistence about my posture of sitting started to feel oppressive. I was so tired of receiving this message from everyone around me: "Be a lady. Keep your knees together. Be a lady." And then I met him. He sat next to me at the table, in the bar, biting my earlobe and pulling my hair as I urged myself to remain just sane enough not to get in too much trouble. His hands traveled all over my body, and his mouth followed the spots the hands had missed. Our drinks lay untouched as we explored a far more delectable concoction. "Spread your legs," he whispered into my ear. The words hit me like a ton of bricks. My mouth went dry, my fingers ached, and I couldn't control the sounds coming out of my mouth. "Spread your legs." I couldn't get enough of listening to those words come out of his mouth. Finally, there was someone who wasn't urging me to be a lady, and I liked it. Finally, someone who didn't want to teach me about the dignity between my legs and just play with it instead. "Spread your legs." I used to beg him to say that to me. I'd close my eyes, pull him close. The taste of his spearmint gum would make me ache in my knees. For months, I couldn't chew spearmint gum without getting turned on, and I'd whisper in his ear. I'd beg to hear those words: "Spread your legs." Because God damn it, those words set me free. Finally, I wasn't there to protect or preserve. I wasn't a child. I wasn't a sexual object there to use. Those words made me feel validated as a sexual being. I was there to play and learn and discover, and he was okay with that. He liked that. We liked it together. "Spread your legs." It was an invitation, and I'm so glad that I went to that party instead of my mother's. Her party may be shiny and perfect, laughter and smiles and nice handbags. It looks very beautiful from the outside, but it's fake. My party is dirty, cheap, smells weird, and leaves you bruised and questioning your moral center, but it's real, and everybody is allowed to keep their legs spread. It's just more fun that way. I hope you enjoyed that. I was so struck by that piece of writing and how it addresses the whole issue of shame that I asked her permission to read it on my podcast, and she consented, and I asked how she wanted to be described, which is exactly how I described her at the beginning of reading this. And thank you so much for allowing me to share that with my listeners. It's a pretty remarkable piece of writing that really is emotionally evocative of how that feels to be told, you know, be a lady. I remember that a little bit from my grandmother, but really not so much from my mom. So that was from Arushi in India. Thank you, Arushi, so much. And now I want to share with you some thoughts I've had about the whole shame thing, and I'm going to close the podcast with this. I came up with a saying a while ago, and I actually have it on the back of my business card, and I probably should register it or do whatever you do to make sure nobody steals your words, right? And this is it. Shame is the silent saboteur of sexual satisfaction. Not only is that amazing alliteration, it's just really, really true. Shame is so damaging in all walks of life. So I've been sitting and thinking about how much shame and the ways in which shame is connected to this wild adventure that we call pegging. So let's explore that a bit. Shame absolutely prevents many a man from exploring anal play. There is absolutely no question about that at all. Now, a lot of the stuff about shame is Brené Brown has talked about so eloquently and so specifically in her two TED Talks, which I think I've linked to like five times in all of my podcasts, and I'm going to link to them again because they're amazing. But she talks about shame. And so she's helped the world understand shame a lot better. You know, her TED Talks have received countless views, like millions and millions, tens of millions. And so those links are going to be in the Linkorama. The biggest area of shame for men, Brené Brown says, is appearing weak. So there is a societal contract that all men have to follow, that they're never, ever, ever allowed to appear weak or feminine in any way. And that is what society expects of them. And it's a huge burden that we put on men. It really is awful. Weak can be seen as feminine, which is actually a really sad statement of the underlying misogyny in this world, because a man being seen as feminine is judged as less than. I am really loving what I'm seeing lately with men wearing skirts and dressing en femme, as they call it, wearing makeup if they want to, and dressing kind of in between the genders, or doing the full-on cross-dressing, which is why I did that second cross-dressing podcast. And the whole thing about you're weak if you dress that way. Okay, witness my interview with Mark from podcast number 110. Mark loves wearing beautiful frilly panties. As a matter of fact, you can see his favorite pair. If you go to podcast number 110, which I will again put in the Linkorama, he sent me a picture of his favorite panties. They're purple with ruffles. Mark fits the outer appearances of what society definitely would call a manly man, and nobody's going to argue that he's not strong or masculine. Nobody's going to call him weak because he's a United States Marine. But Mark has dug deep into who he is and what it means to embrace all of himself instead of embracing only what society deems acceptable. And after that digging deep, he decided that although he can't wear panties openly because everything he does outwardly reflects the military, even while he's not on duty, he does the next best thing and he wears the panties under his clothes every day that he can. He told me that he embraces his feminine side. He embraces the part of him that needs feminine expression, which doesn't make him any less of a man. It's simply fabric that's wrapped around his ass and genitals. And, okay, so one of the things that people get afraid of is judgment from a partner, of course, and I do recall very specifically that he waxed poetic about how his wife was so amazing that she said, "This doesn't make you any less of a man. You still provide for me. You still take care of me." So, yes, his partner is totally on board with him embracing his feminine, which is a beautiful thing. The other area that shame can creep into pegging is because of this whole ridiculous association with being homosexual or bisexual. And that's another fucked up societal view that, yes, you all know I've been battling that for quite some time. And part of this is related to this really weird underlying thing with guys. Yeah, you know, I didn't know this existed until I started talking to guys about it, about if you allow yourself to be penetrated, you are somehow less than. And this is the misogynistic part, is really if you believe that if you allow penetration, you are somehow less of a man, then what does that say about the underlying beliefs you have about women? Because women get penetrated in sex all the time. Well, you know, it all wraps around this whole concept of vulnerability and the conflation of vulnerability with weakness. That's where it gets really messed up. That really intense connotation of enjoying anal stimulation means that as a man, you must like other men is quite pesky. And I'm going to quote one more time that study that was done at George Mason University. And they polled 24,787 gay and bisexual men between the ages of 18 and 87 in the United States. The study aimed to, quote, document the sexual behaviors that gay and bisexually identified men report during their most recent male-partnered sexual event, and to describe the situational characteristics and participants' evaluation of these events. So, the majority of the participants were white, like 84.6%, and identified as gay, 85.9%. 57.4% received a bachelor's degree or higher. And here's what they found out. 35.5% and 33.8% of the participants engaged in receptive or inserted anal intercourse, respectively. Receptive anal sex was most common among the 18 to 24-year-olds, and insertive was most popular among the 30 to 39-year-olds. So when people immediately assume that liking anal stimulation is, boom, anal sex, which is why it's all connected with the whole pegging thing, right? It's like, if you're getting fucked in the ass, then of course you must be gay, right? And the fact is that gay men actually only have receptive and insertive mid-30% of the time, 35 or so percent of the time. Because there's lots of other things that you can do sexually. It's not all about the butt fucking. Good God, people. So this leads into what Dan Savage talked about one time on one of his shows. He talked about a study done in Montreal that concluded that out bisexual and out gay men are happier than straight men. Well, it's kind of a leap there, because first of all, the study only involved 87 men whose average age was just over 24, and Montreal is a very progressive city in which coming out has far less repercussions than, say, Kansas. But the point that Dan was trying to make is that straight men spend so much time not to appear gay. This is connected to the desire never to appear weak, because feminine and gay are seen as weak, as compared to society's ideal of strength and masculinity, their, like, bullshit vision of it. And I'm not just talking about guys' opinions either. Okay, straight guys spend an inordinate amount of time trying to not appear weak or gay or feminine. You know, they issue choices that would lead down that path all the time. I'm not wearing that pink shirt. I'm not going to the opera. I'm not wearing a skirt. I'm not, you know, whatever. But women have these opinions as well. Women have been so indoctrinated to expect men to always be strong that any sign of weakness is many times really, unfortunately, not met with understanding and empathy. Rather, it is often met with derision and scorn, which is so sad. You know, that whole women want a strong man and not a weak one and blah, blah, blah. And women have had emotional carte blanche for a really long time now. When women are emotionally distraught about something, they expect the men in their lives to put aside their own emotions and hold space for theirs, to take care of them. Well, so when does that happen in reverse? Tell me that. Most women have no clue what to do with an emotionally open, vulnerable man. What if he's really emotionally upset? They have no experience whatsoever in putting their own emotions aside and holding space for that guy who really needs it. Why? Because they conflate vulnerability with weakness, and they expect their guys to not have that soft side. And the men are supposed to be strong, you know? And again, Brené Brown, gotta give so much credit to this woman, tells a great story about that, about a guy who came up to get one of her books signed. And he said, so how come you only write about women? And she said, well, you know, that's really all I study. And he said, well, that's convenient because, you know, you're sitting here talking about vulnerability. And I got to tell you that my wife and my daughters are the hardest on me of anybody. They would rather see me die on my white horse than appear weak. And it was just such a poignant comment to make, and it was so far-reaching in terms of describing exactly what it's like for so many men. So, okay, let's go back to talking about pegging then, because we talked about all this other stuff. Pegging is the ultimate vulnerability. Holy crap. I mean, what is required of pegging? Intense vulnerability on a level that most men are completely unacquainted with. Penetration, especially anal penetration, is a really intimate and vulnerable thing. To allow someone to do with your body, it requires a tremendous amount of trust. So how can you possibly trust someone enough to do pegging with them if they're uncomfortable with your vulnerability? And if they see vulnerability as a weakness, this like brings a whole new meaning to, will she respect me in the morning? And you know, I've heard men say that. I've heard one man recently tell me, I love pegging, but I can't do it with my wife because I just can't be that vulnerable with her. I can't go there with her. And it's just, for me, it's a sad thing to hear. It's a very sad thing to hear. But on the other hand, having described all of these things, all of these environmental factors and societal factors and all of this stuff, I understand it. I get it. And I understand why stepping over that line and actually exploring pegging is such a big deal for so many guys. It's a really big deal. So now let's talk about shame a little bit more. Secrecy, silence, and judgment are required to grow shame. And this is direct from Brené Brown. Secrecy, silence, and judgment. So here's another thing to think about. If you really love to secretly watch pegging porn, that can reinforce the shame because it's this secret thing and there's a silence there and you're afraid you're going to be judged. See? So let's talk about the judgment. There's a fear of others' judgment. There's a fear of others knowing your secrets. There's a fear of being outcast or ridiculed or thought of as less than. And then the silence, you know, not telling your partner because of a fear of repercussions. There is a guy who wrote to me early on in my podcast career who said, you know, I really want to do this and I really want to tell my wife. I hadn't done my podcast number 112 at that point. You know, I was in the beginning of doing all of this. And I said, you know, I think you really need to tell her. Well, so he did. And his wife, who was a nurse, if you're listening out there, nurse, you blew it. She just said, you know, I can't stand this. You're perverted. I'm leaving. And basically up and left him. She left him. And so he wrote me and I was appalled. I was sad for him. And I was kind of blown away that perhaps it was me that had caused this to happen because I encouraged him to talk to her about it, right? She totally judged him. And whatever investment he had with her in that marriage, she blew it to pieces just because of that. So the secrecy part, yeah, I can see where you don't want to tell. You want to be silent about it. So the good news about that story is that 2 years later, he wrote me and he said, so, hey, I'm the guy, right, that the wife left when I told her, right? Well, it's 2 years later, and I finally found the dream partner who loves doing the kinky things and the pegging, and I have never been happier, so thank you. Well, that was really gracious on his part, and I'm glad it ended up that way. Took 2 years, but it ended up that way, and he was much, much happier. But yes, you risk a lot. You risk a lot. So with the silence and not telling your partner, there you go. And then there's men who discover anal pleasure early in life. They usually don't tell anybody for fear of being an outcast among their peers or judged by their families, that kind of thing. So the secrecy. So, you know, if you continue to fantasize about what you desire, perhaps you read erotica, watch porn, or you're actively self-pleasuring, but doing those things in secret. Here's the thing. It reinforces the shame. It totally reinforces the shame. And so all of these things are why it's so difficult to step over that line and self-pleasure, step over that line and tell your partner about your desires, step over that line and not feel shame about it. All of these factors play into it. And there's a big difference between guilt, which is like I did something bad, like, for example, watched porn all day instead of doing your chores. Okay, that's guilt. But shame is I am bad. Shame is thinking of yourself as defective or less than or a bad person. So, again, from Brené Brown, shame is highly correlated with depression, addiction, violence, eating disorders, bullying, aggression, and suicide. Here's the part that blows my mind, and I still have a hard time a little bit wrapping my head around it. Guilt, and we, you know, I explained the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is inversely correlated with those things. So if you just feel guilt about something because you didn't do the thing you were supposed to do or you did something kind of bad and you feel like you shouldn't have done that, but deep down you don't feel like you're a bad person, then what you're kind of doing is you're having an awareness that you did something that really doesn't fit your vision of yourself as a person. And it's good to do that because you learn to be a better person that way. And amongst all of this, empathy is the antidote to shame. So, all you women out there who are listening, if your partner comes to you and wants to explore this pegging thing, chances are pretty good that they feel a fair amount of shame around it. So, being understanding, listening, not judging, not freaking out is really, really important thing. It's a very important thing. Even if you choose that you're never, ever going to do pegging with your partner because it's just not your thing, still empathy, gratitude certainly for letting you know them on a deeper level because they've shared your desires with you. They've broken that silence and that secrecy and actually opened up. So empathy, yes, empathy is the antidote to shame. So all of you men out there, as Brené Brown says, two things, dare greatly, dare, break the silence, talk about it, And then a quote from Brené Brown. Vulnerability is our most accurate measure of courage. Now, I absolutely love that one, because I've always said it takes a strong person to be vulnerable. So what I'm going to close with is I'm going to read you one more time something I wrote for all of you anal aficionados, all you lovely men out there who have been brave enough to check this out. Dear ass men, anal can be awesome, as you well know, or are perhaps just discovering. Sexual orientation has nothing to do with what part of the body you enjoy having stimulated. You are the only one who gets to decide who you are attracted to, whether it's men or women or either or neither. And if anyone tries to assign you a sexual orientation based on what part of the body you enjoy having stimulated, laugh in their face at the ridiculousness of that assumption. Laugh at the temerity of anyone who thinks they know you better than you know yourself. And especially laugh at the exceptional ignorance of anyone who would actually use sexual orientation as a slur. Then go about your sexy business exploring your asses, fucking, pegging, rimming, plugging, fingering, or whatever you most love. Because you are the brave ones, dear hearts. You are the ones taking a deep breath and indulging in a first-class tour of your own bodies to discover all the pleasure you can handle. Not an adventure for the faint-hearted, and don't you know it. There are few things more soul-touching and vulnerable and open and intense and even scary than welcoming someone into your ass. I celebrate your courage amidst the ignorance, your openness amidst the fear, and your willingness to be intrepid explorers of your own sexuality. Well done. Love, Ruby. So should you ever find yourself in a position where you are really doubting yourself and your desires and you're feeling that shame and you need the reassurance, all you need to do is to go down to that drop-down menu on my podcast, New to Pegging? ? And you will find the section for men. And in the list of all the articles I have there, you will find this under To the Awesome Ass Men. So that any time you're starting to feel the shame, any time you're kind of going, oh my God, what does this say about me? What is she going to think of me? Am I doing the right thing? Am I just a perv? And the shame starts happening. Go back and read that. Because really, you're courageous. You're vulnerable and you're courageous. So good for you guys. All right, I'm going to leave it there. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blogs, my podcasts, my erotica, and the forum. Or pegging101.com, where you will find informational articles only with no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps, which you can find a sampling of under the tab Follow on my website for both Android and iPhones. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you like. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. And remember, if you order some sexy new toys from enticeme.com, use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase. Send your questions to Ruby at peggingparadise.com. I want them all. No matter what the questions are, I want them all. Many listeners are going to learn along with you, so don't be shy. Throw those questions in my mailbox or call me at 805-500-6544. That is 805-500-6544. Thanks for downloading and listening, everyone. You rock. Happy pegging.